Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome. I'm Anne Wilson, and it's great to welcome you to this podcast series in which I continue my interview with Sarah Visor. Emerge Australia's podcasts deliver interviews with a range of individuals, patients, clinicians, and researchers impacted by and associated with ME/CFS and long COVID. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present, those emerging and listening to this podcast. Once again, you will have listened to Emerge Australia's Ambassador Bloom singing her beautiful rendition of John Lennon's Imagine. It's great to welcome Sarah Visor back to this podcast series as we continue to work through her book, Too Tired to Think, An Intersection of Hope and Reality for Those Who Battle with ME/CFS and Their Carers. So welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you, Anne. Lovely to be here.
And today we're going to cover what is involved in navigating the emotional journey associated with ME/CFS for both patients and carers. And I think it's the emotional journey that is one of the longest journeys that people experience, because you go through all the highs and lows, but in particular experience a lot of loss, which is associated with a lot of grief. And that's what you're going to take us through today. And you've outlined that really beautifully in the chapter on grief in your book. So without any further ado, welcome, Sarah, and let's get into it.
Yeah, thank you, Anne. And look, you're spot on. I think it's no surprise that anyone that goes through a long-term condition, but particularly these conditions of ME/CFS or long COVID, they're going to experience this roller coaster of emotions. And, you know, we've already seen in our previous conversations that we're going through a marathon event here that's got, you know, so many implications. It often lasts not just for months, but for years at a time. We've got symptoms that are vague and not easy to explain. You can't even understand yourself, let alone try and explain it to other people. There's peaks and troughs that we go through along the way. It's the good days, the bad days, the some days that you can barely get out of bed. So you consider all that. It's going to be no surprise that there's going to be this range of complicated emotions that we go through, often on a daily basis.
Right. Well, in order to better understand what it is that people are going through, you're going to take us through Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's grief cycle, which is really the gold standard that is used all around the world for developing an understanding of what it is that people go through when they've experienced a loss. A lot of us don't necessarily understand what it is we're going through, because all we experience is what we're feeling. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, as you're going to tell us, put together a framework that helps us to make sense of the full range of emotions that we go through when we experience a loss. And losses come from different experiences. They may not always come from having someone who has passed away, for example, because that's how we often think of grief. But they also may come from not being able to do the things that we used to be able to do, or not seeing people that we used to see as often, changing jobs, losing jobs, all of those kind of almost day-to-day experiences can trigger a grief response. And so I'll hand over to you, Sarah, to talk about the framework that was developed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the cycle that can explain what it is that people are feeling and why they're feeling it.
Yeah, that's a great introduction, Anne. Thank you. And I've always found this such a good model for explaining that complex mix of emotions that we go through. So it came from, as you say, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who was working with terminally ill patients, and she found that there were some commonalities that they go through as the stages of grief, not necessarily in the order. But they go through five different stages, five different big emotions. And these are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So, what I've found and what I've written about in the book is that all of these different emotions, the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, are so good at explaining what you feel like when you're living with ME/CFS. And I found that each day can be a roller coaster of emotions. And like this roller coaster, there can be these up times where, I feel pretty good. I might have a lot of hope, a lot of elation, a lot of joy, a lot of love in my life. And then what goes up often has to come back down again. And I start to get back into those stages of grief. So what I've found over my experience is it can be this big jumble of emotions. It's not necessarily something that you go through in order. And I'll give you some examples that I've outlined in my book. So just as it relates to ME/CFS. So we think about denial. You might say words like, I'm so tired all the time. But I've just got to keep going. I'm just going to do what I've always done is I have to keep working. And then anger. It's so frustrating. I can't even do the basics or get a straight answer from the medical system. Bargaining. If this weakness will just leave my body, then starting tomorrow, I'm going to make the most of this new opportunity. Back to anger again. I've had a bad day and I feel mad at everyone and everything. Depression. This is it. It's been weeks. I feel awful. I feel sad and I feel alone. Back to anger. Why is this happening to me? It's so unfair. Bargaining. If I can just have a good few days for that wedding, I'll take whatever happens afterwards. Acceptance. I've recited the Serenity Prayer so many times, I'm starting to believe it, and I accept that I cannot change what's happening to me right now. And so on and so on. So you can start to see there's a big jumble of emotions there, and you might go through them simultaneously. You might even be in a little bit of denial, but still have that anger bubbling in the background. We don't necessarily go through each emotion in a fixed order. It's likely that you're jumping between the emotions. And if that's you, if that's how you feel, then it's, you are completely normal. What you might notice is there is a correlation between your energy and your mood. So when you have a good day in your physical peaks, it might be that you feel quite good. You might feel a little bit more likely to feel that sense of acceptance and embrace what's become your new normal. And for some of us, this will be our danger zone where we'll just push too hard and do too much. But then when we get to our physical troughs, the low points, it's most likely when we're going to feel those negative emotions, the frustration, the anger. You might also feel down and depressed. So that how it all lays out with ME/CFS.
I get that, and I can relate to that. I don't have ME/CFS, but I can really understand that when you have good days, and you're so happy that you have a good day, and you may tend to want to do more and then at times overdo it, as you say, the troughs that happen when you crash are really can be so deep, and you know it can feel must be you must feel hopeless at times or helpless to be able to do anything about it. But do you find that given that you understand the grief cycle, do you find that you're actually able to catch yourself and say, well, what I'm feeling right now is actually normal for what I'm going through?
It's an interesting question. And it's, you know, I would like to say, yes, of course. And I've written a whole book about this and it's fine. But if I look at things, there are days that it really catches me unaware still. And what I found, though, is that I've become quicker at identifying and using some of the strategies that we'll go through a little bit later, that I can pull myself out of it just that little bit quicker over time, or I'm a little bit more accepting. And it's that point of acceptance, and that's where the whole concept of a new normal comes from, where I'm able to live with, you know, what is still daily fatigue in my body, but I don't necessarily feel like this stops my life, and I'm able to continue going, you know, incorporating those up and those down days as well.
Sure. So can you talk a little bit more about acceptance? Because as we know, some people never get to acceptance as part of the grief cycle. It's sort of getting to that stage where, you know, you really understand, and you may be accepting of your situation, and you're accepting of the fact that you have all these sets of feelings, and you kind of are able to say it's okay. So in your experience, do you actually get to a point of acceptance?
I don't think acceptance is an end point in itself. In my view of the world, acceptance is something that you would feel at different points in time. And it's a far easier emotion than that depression and the anger and all those other big emotions. But you still will, I think, feel them at different points. But acceptance is that moments of peace that you can have at different points in time. I would say, as I said, I still go through those points of, you know, I wake up exhausted and I'm like, just no, not today. Nothing's going to happen today. and I've learned that, you know, my response to that can be that I rage, I cry, I can feel terrible, I can feel like I'm letting people down, going through all of those emotions of grief. But overall, it's just a waste of my energy. And I've learned that I don't want to waste my energy. And that's where that acceptance can be a really useful strategy for me. It's just taken me a long time, and it's not always that I can get there straight away.
People have to give themselves space to accept how they're feeling emotionally. Like, for example, if you've got a dark day or if you're angry, do you need to give yourself space to sort of unravel that to start to feel better, or should you be fighting and railroading against it?
Yeah, look, I don't think accepting is just giving into fatigue. That was something I might have thought at the beginning. I'm like, I need to fight this. I need to have a response to it. But I don't feel like it's giving into fatigue. And there was a really good quote that I read. It was from Michael J. Fox, who's had Parkinson's disease for many years. And he says, in his experience, that acceptance doesn't mean resignation. It means understanding that something is what it is and there's got to be a way through it. Now, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to just jump straight from, I wake up, I feel terrible, today's not going to happen, I'm going to let people down, and I'm just going to go, oh, well, there's going to be a way through it. There is this process that you normally will go through. It's normal human emotions. But for me, what's been the real marathon is finding that way through to use less of my energy on the fight of these emotions and more acceptance of just what is.
And I think that's so. Who am I to disagree with Michael J. Fox? But that definition, I think acceptance doesn't mean resignation, absolutely. It means understanding that something is what it is, full stop. Finding a way through it is your resilience to try to keep pushing forward. And as you say, the acceptance is letting go of the fight.
And again, I just want to reemphasize this. It's, some days you might just find you are fighting. I still do on occasion as well. And it's not, you're not doing it wrong. It's not the wrong way to be. It's never an all or nothing. It's just a way of living. And it's part of my new normal is that I know that there are just going to be some days that I wake up and I'm going to have less energy than others. And I need to find a way through those. But I do have a couple of different chapters in my book that are around what I call dark days. And I think it actually is a really important topic to speak through is dark days and how we might handle and how what are some of the strategies that people listening to this might have in place for those inevitable
Yeah.
days that are darker.
So can you find emotional peace of mind on those dark days?
Yeah, of course. It's for me, it's been it's a lot of different trying of different things to see what's going to happen. But I found out that over time you can't dodge dark days. No one can. Like everyone has things they're going through. But when you're going through something that's as long and over many years, like ME/CFS, it's just this marathon of endurance and patience and of course, some of the days that you're just going to feel down about these things. So that's the emotional reality that I talk to, is that these dark days are going to occur. And, I often call it sinking into my foggy feelings of despair because I've got brain fog, I'm exhausted, my body aches, I'm done. And I bet others listening to this can relate to those as well. But over time, I've come to recognize that those feelings, those days are temporary. And whether it's temporary for a few days or for a few weeks or whatever period of time, I found for me that it's temporary and I've become faster at pulling myself out. So I list a few different strategies in my book that myself and other people have gone through. And I can take you through a couple now if you like.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, look, first up, I'm a big advocate for just letting yourself have a good cry. And I once saw, I think it was a psychologist who shared with me, she said, tears are just nature's tranquilizer. And I used to always think tears were wrong. I find when I cry at the moment, I feel exhausted afterwards. So, maybe that's why I was trying to fight them at the beginning. But just letting myself sink into that, just sink into the emotion. I lay in my bed and I just sink into the emotion. I find that level of acceptance, it's almost accepting that level of emotion, can be so healing in that moment when you've gone through that. And then after I've had a really good cry, what I often do, and this is not going to be for everyone, but what I often do is I write about what I've been feeling. And that's pretty much how my book started, was just all my writings over the years. I had so much to draw upon. I can't just tell you how much I had to draw upon. But I found that journaling, the letting the emotions out, just clearing my mind is just so cathartic. And, I was really inspired. I don't know if you've heard about Seabiscuit. Have you heard?
Yeah,
It's
I
a
have it.
lady. Well, it's a lady, Laura Hillenbrand. She wrote a book called Seabiscuit when she had ME/CFS, and she was so affected she couldn't even sit up. So she just wrote, like laying down in bed. Like she just wrote and wrote. And that's part of what inspired me. So you don't have to write a book. It's not saying that, but writing can be such a great outlet for these types of emotions. So having a cry, writing about it, then I've also found a really great strategy is just sleeping on it. Often what I feel in one day doesn't carry through the next day. If I just go, all right, I'm just going to let today go and I'm just going to go to bed and get some sleep. Sometimes everything feels better the next day. A fourth strategy is around your support network. And look, this plays such a big role for us. It's an investment. I even have a name for it. It's called Phone a Lifeline. And this may be friends or family or people who is, we're just looking for people who can understand us. Maybe it's a call, maybe it's a text when you're really affected. And for people, like often we don't necessarily have that support network that we can reach out to, especially, if it's been quite a few years. And so other ways that people find that sense of connection is like things like forums on Facebook. I can tell you, forums on Facebook have changed my world because I really felt like I found my type of people. They write, in ways I go, wow, that is spot on. They can really capture encapsulate the experience in ways that other people just can't understand. Places like Emerge, yeah, I was going to say places like Emerge too, you also try and address these types of emotions.
Yeah, can I just interrupt there? I'm really interested in your views. I'm digressing a little bit, but one of the biggest losses that people with ME/CFS experience is the loss of social interaction, as in with friends, kids at school, etc. Do you find that social media and the various Facebook groups reduce that sense of isolation at all?
Look, I would say absolutely, because what I'm like, well, I want to talk to you specifically about people in your life. But one thing that I know is you can still have all these people left in your life, but they can never truly understand what you're going through in the way that people who are actually going through it with you can understand. And the way people write on these types of forums, it's often so validating just to hear, like people are just so open with their experience and even with their pain. And that's, I guess it's something to also be aware of, that you might be absorbing some of this pain and it might be exhausting for you yourself. But I found it over the years so validating to understand that I'm not alone in this and what I'm feeling is real. And what I'm feeling is actually replicated by other people. And it's been only through these like forums of finding other people. What we're trying to do is just finding your people who can understand, and that goes a long way.
I get it.
Yeah. And then the last strategy that I've got here is just finding the ways, like, and knowing in advance the ways that you can soothe and distract yourself. Now, I love getting absorbed into a good comedy or something on TV, but it's not always the visual medium is often really exhausting. So I also have music, I also have podcasts, I have these playlists ready to go, entertainment that is light that I can just lay down and listen to. I find these are such good ways of distracting and soothing myself when I'm just not feeling the best. So you're allowed to have your dark days. It's normal. And what I'm saying here is it's good to have an understanding of what's going to work for you, knowing that, just accepting that these dark days will occur and what's the little things that we're going to get you through those days.
Well, that's really important, and the next point we come to is around, who it is that you've had around you to support you. These have featured in one of your strategies. Can you please expand a little bit on what your experience has been, with regard to the people you've had around you?
Yeah, this is such an important topic, and I've written about this a lot because who you have around you at the best of times is important, but it's particularly important when you have conditions like ME/CFS. And I've always found it so challenging to explain to people or what why life is like, and it's especially true if you're once a really vital and energetic type of person. I'll give you a story that I write about. And it's a couple of years ago, and I'd had ME/CFS for 6 years at that point. And it was a close friend of mine. He asked me a question. He said, like, what do you think is the most valuable resource that we have? And my answer is like easy energy. But he shook his head. And I'm like, okay, all right. And I said, okay, health and energy, right? What could be more important than health and energy? But he shook his head again. And I'm like, really? Okay, what do you think it is then? And he said, our most valuable resource is time. And this got me thinking because, we're all going to have our different perspectives around this. And I could see that the time was true for him in his set of circumstances. But for anyone dealing with ME/CFS, energy is likely to be the ultimate resource that you have. And time can be, it's almost like, for me, time is almost like an energy, an enemy. I want to have less time, if possible, on some days because I'm just feeling so bad. But it struck me, why this was important to me was it struck me that I'd been trying to explain my experience to this friend for 6 years at that point. And he just didn't get it. And it wasn't from a lack of like him trying. It's just he just was probably never going to get my understand my experience. And his perception of me was stuck back in the past when I was the energetic and vital person that I was when we first struck up our friendship. So why I found that was important was, once I found those words, the diagnosis of ME/CFS, I was elated. I thought this is going to having a diagnosis, it explains so much. And I thought everyone's going to start to understand my experience. But the reality for us is the diagnosis can be just words. It's not an explanation for a lot of people. And, it's not a way of getting help or connecting with them. It doesn't under guarantee they're going to understand your condition. And what I found is that continually having to explain myself, even to the people who really want to understand me, it can just be an exhausting and thankless task.
So I can understand that because you can tell someone, I suppose, I can imagine you can tell someone I can't get out of bed today, or you can't even say that. You just don't say anything and someone else says, oh, she's in bed, and people could easily say, well, surely she's had enough sleep now. I mean, it's that level of not connecting and not truly understanding what it is that you're experiencing. I can imagine that must be so frustrating for you to experience. So how do you manage your relationships, particularly trying to keep them energy positive when you may not have a lot of energy to give?
Yeah, there's no more spoons left for it. Yeah, how do you manage your relationships? You manage them carefully. So I guess we've spoken about pacing, and the idea of pacing is that you have a certain amount of energy to spend or invest in your day. And how you spend that energy is going to be really important. And what I've found over time is that the people that I have around me, they form a huge part of that expenditure. So you can't ever control every person or interaction. You might find that you've got all these medical appointments and they're frustrating, but they're necessary. We work with different people. Sometimes they're people we don't want to work with. We've got family around us. They might not be as supportive as we want. So what I found over time is, what used to be previously reciprocal relationships sometimes need to be more about me. For a period of time, I just don't have the spoons or the energy to give people. And the issue can be for people with ME/CFS is that, people can only be understanding of this type of one-way relationship for so long. They might give you a little bit of leeway at the beginning, but over time, you'll find that this can wear on even the most tightest of our relationships. And what I have come to realize is that My whole life, I've been what I would describe as a good girl. I'm someone who does all of the right things. I try and look after other people. Try and be there for people at work and be there for people at home. And I find it really difficult to focus just on myself. It can, when I do that, I feel selfish or I feel that it's wrong. And I'm sure there are other people listening to this who would understand exactly what I'm saying here. It seems to be quite common. But, sometimes and even now, the only option available to me is to focus on myself. I just don't have the energy. And it's like, in any safety briefing on any aircraft you go through, they always say you need to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. We hear this all the time, but it's so true. It's just such a good visual to think, you need to be able to look after yourself first before you can be able to give to others. And you can only hope that those key relationships that you have are going to last the distance. So in my book, I do go through three different groups of people. So these are the people who want to help and understand. You've got people who leave you alone as you become too much to handle. And then you've got the people who actively set you back. So that first group, the first group is around the people who want to help and understand. These are the people that are most likely worth the expenditure. These are the people in your pacing that you want to spend the most energy on. They're worth that precious energy of yours. But you've always got to remember that there's, you're going to be part of their orbit as well, and they're going to have their own things going on. And all of the best relationships always have this period of give and take. So this is the rub, Anne. It's like, you're part of this orbit. You might want to be doing the right things, but you just don't have the spoons there to be able to be in these people's life. So it becomes this balancing act. And I found that it's a balancing act over time. It's strategies like having strong communication, just doing your best to explain your situation. And look, I do have a free resource on my website, with some conversation starters that have this for that exact purpose. Which I can share with you. What I've also found, so that's the people that you already have in your life, but what I've also found is that sometimes strangers or new connections or people who are just loosely in your social circle, they take less energy in a lot of ways. My version of this is the dog park. I take my dog and we can just talk about the dogs and have a lovely little chat, and then I'm off and I don't even know these people's names half the time. It's sometimes it's about finding that sense of connection, but in ways it's not going to be draining.
Right. You talk also about, people who leave you alone as you become too much to handle. Have you ever sort of thought about the fact that sometimes people leave you alone because they don't understand how to help you? As in, they don't know what to say, they don't know what to do, and therefore it's easier to retreat. And so, they keep their distance, but really they are good people who would really love to help if they only understood how.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And it's, part of the strategy, my new normal is trying not to judge the people who are in that situation, exactly as you say. It at the beginning, at least, it hurts. It hurts a lot. I know how disappointing it can be when people just disappear from your life. But what I've found over time is, learning to just let go. Even just a little bit is, again, it's just that easier way. It's not the fight. It's finding an easier, a better use of my energy.
Yeah, I think it's getting over the hurt often is a challenge. And I'm not now speaking about ME/CFS. I'm just speaking about life in general. It's getting over the hurt, and it's sometimes allowing, it's sometimes thought stopping, stopping the thoughts that make you think that think whatever about the people who distance themselves from your life. Sometimes we make up a whole narrative around why someone has distanced themselves from us, and realistically, it's the narrative that's in our head rather than what's really happening. And letting go of that, I find, and just accepting that for whatever reason, that's happened, and then moving on is quite liberating, or can be liberating. Is Have you experienced that?
Yeah, there's many relationships that I've had to mourn and then let go. And one thing that, I've come to realize is that honestly, living with ME/CFS and going from being, as I was saying before, an energetic, vital person to someone who just can't engage or who might only be able to do a send a text rather than be available on the phone, what that means is I'm the one that's changed the rules here in a lot of ways. And, I went from, in my case, I went from being a really extroverted, energetic person to, I can see now, I still can be that touchy and introverted, and just want to be left alone. So it's nothing that anyone's said or done. I just literally have nothing left to give in those situations. But what I know is that can be jarring for the people around me. So just being a little bit aware and giving them a little bit more grace, as you're saying, and understanding that they have their own things going on, and I might not necessarily have the energy available to be able to be there for them in the ways that they need as well. That was something that with each relationship I had to kind of get my head around and find a way of just letting it go.
So can you talk a little bit about what you teach through your coaching work with regard to catching positive and negative emotions?
Yeah, this one's really interesting. It's what I found is, and becoming an expert, like I say, I'm a human barometer, I'm an expert at pacing here. I know what's happening with my life at any point in time and my energy, and learning to invest my energy wisely. One of the things that came up was that there is this whole concept of positive and negative emotions being catching. So the positivity around you can be catching. If you're around someone who's really hopeful and optimistic, that's can be a great inspiration on you. But the negative can also be catching. And that's that kind of, like, if you're around a bunch of stressed out people, likely you will also feel stressed out. And there's even a term for it. It's called emotional contagion. So what I found is that I just have to be really aware of the effect that others have on my energy bank, and where possible, to limit the energy drain, to maybe even find ways of protecting myself so that I'm not letting the energy through if it is a negative force around me. In my coaching as well, we talk about not just people, but all of the other influences, the media, the news, the movies that you watch, the books that you read. It's like all of these influences, all of these have the possibility of having some type of contagion. And when you don't, when you have limited energy, you've got to be really, really careful of that.
So further in this chapter, you talk about relationships, and the fact that relationships are always a two-way street, and the effect that they have on you. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
And it's a little bit about what we're saying. It's, your people impact on your life, but you're also part of their circle. What I found is sometimes the relationships, like my version of the dog park, of not having to give too much out, is the type of connection that I can sustain. I can't necessarily have really in-depth conversations like I used to. And some days, it's easier than others. What I found is that over time, with people that are energetically expensive, you can try and bring them back into that group one in different ways. like whether that might be, and that the group one was the people who want to understand or people who are helpful to you. And that might be just the way you communicate, being able to tell them of your experience and get some of that through. Or it might just be the way that you're able to process what they're telling you and not let it affect you in different ways. There's a whole skill set, I guess, that goes in and around that. Sometimes it's not possible. Like in this scenario, it can be the best option is to just limit your time with people or to disengage completely if that's a possibility. And you know, I reference the saying, people can come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. It becomes really difficult. This is something that we all struggle with, I think, is when you are tethered to people in some ways, whether it's close, you know, family, it might be your neighbors, people that you work with. And this is the case, you're going to be aware of the effect that they can have on your energy. And, you know, we need to be aware that we need to make choices around this. And that might be things like spending less time than you normally would be with them, choices around putting in some strong boundaries that protect your energy, or even learning, I guess, where to invest your energy, what's going to be the wisest possible use of your energy, and maybe just as we were talking about, letting go at least for a while of some of the things that you find really draining.
Wow, we've covered a lot today, haven't we? We've done a bit of a helicopter view of the grief cycle. We've discussed dealing with dark days, and finally the relationships in your life. Sarah, what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
Yeah, it's a huge topic, and we've just covered like I think it was about four chapters of what I go through because I needed to expand on it. But I guess like some of the core thing that I really think is important here is about trying to find that your own sense of peace and acceptance with your situation, and that's all part of you know a new normal way of living. And hopefully, you know, as a listener, you're starting to see that it's not all or nothing. You can have your ups and downs and the peaks and the troughs, and you can travel through all of these stages of grief. It's difficult navigating conditions like ME/CFS. It's so difficult. You're not alone if you find it difficult, particularly if you think about it can be years that you're experiencing these emotions. And the fact that some people are going to be coming along on the ride with you, and some people just won't be able to do that. And there's a whole level of grief that comes with just that one sentence alone. Just wanted to people to understand that, you know, it's okay if this is your experience. And I think it's something common that we all seem to go through to some extent. It's about embracing the fact that you will have your dark days, allowing them to happen, and hopefully having a couple of different strategies that help you as you travel through them along the way. So as you travel your own emotional roller coaster, ask yourself a question. How can you keep a sense of hope and optimism alive, even through all the peaks and the troughs of your experience?
Well, that's a pretty good question. How do you keep a sense of hope alive even through all the peaks and troughs that you experience? Thank you so much, Sarah. Next, we're going to be navigating your medical reality, building the team of support you need, holding strong when faced with the reality of our currently cracked system. I'd like to add that if there are any issues that have arisen for you today in listening to this episode of Sarah's book about grief and loss, feel free to phone a friend, reach out for some emotional support or professional support from a counsellor, from a social worker, from a psychologist, but reach out for help if you need it, because help is available, and sometimes just talking through how you're feeling and being accepted and accepting how you're feeling at that moment is a huge help. So please feel free to reach out and there are a whole lot of services available that you can look up, or you can also reach out to us at Emerge Australia on our telehealth service. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing with us again today. We're really looking forward to the next chapter in the weeks to come. So we encourage you all to stay tuned and watch this space. For those listening, you can find Sarah and all the details of her book at www.sarahvisor.com/too-tired-to-think. You can also purchase directly from Amazon. As always, today's podcast is part of an Emerge Australia series that records interviews with patients and people of influence to ensure that the voices of those with ME/CFS are seen and heard. This is a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by over 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID. Tune in again for our next interview, and don't forget, for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, visit our website on www.emerge.org.au.
You may say that I'm a dreamer.